Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Our speaker tonight is Teresa. Teresa has for many years been a core member and leader in the Sangha. She's a member of the board and is currently Canando's president. And we look forward to hearing what she has to say tonight, speaking to us all the way from Spain. Thank you, Teresa.
Well, thank you, Dave. So I wanted to say that for a few weeks now, when we chant the loving kindness meditation, that line that says, "Let none by anger or hatred cause harm to another," really sticks in my mind. So when I prepare for Dharma talks, I feel I am not in control. I have an idea in my mind a few weeks ago, but I cannot go with that idea. Maybe in the future I will be able to do that. It's always what comes up and is alive in the last minute. So sometimes it's a bit scary because in the last minute nothing comes up and I think, oh, tomorrow I have to say something and nothing is coming up. It was similar feeling that I had sometimes when I was a reporter in DC and I had an empty computer screen. And a deadline, and I never missed a deadline, but it was always some kind of panic that I wasn't gonna be able to write anything. So my talk tonight is not really a talk, but it's what came up for me. And what I would like to do tonight is read a few things and then have a discussion. So the title of my talk, non-talk is, what is war? And I would love if you could help me to read a few things that I have selected for tonight. And then afterwards, we can all have a discussion. So the first thing that I would like to write, to read tonight is, Les's letter, his last letter, standing up with Ukraine. And please have some patience because I will have to share a few things on the screen. I hope it all goes smoothly. Can I have a volunteer to read Les's letter? It's a short one. Maybe you already had the opportunity to read it. Thank you, Megan. Can you please go ahead?
With extraordinary courage, the citizens of Ukraine are standing up to the relentless invasion of their nation. They are determined to preserve what is inherently theirs, the freedom to live their lives in accordance with their own choices. The entire free world supports them in their fight. We all feel outraged and saddened by what is happening, and we feel a crippling helplessness when we try to envision how we can respond to the menacing forces beyond our control. But we are not entirely helpless. There are things we can do. Although we cannot personally stand alongside people in Ukraine on their soil, we can join them in their fight against ignorance and injustice wherever we are right now. We can start by being warm, open, and present to people close at hand. And if we feel touched and concerned by the war in Ukraine, we should bring that feeling forward, quietly reaching out in deed and word to whomever we meet. We can join in spiritual solidarity with those brave people suffering halfway around the world. And if an appeal or opportunity on behalf of them comes to us, we can respond with a generous mind. Now is the time for us to renew our determination to practice care and compassion, to wrap our hearts around suffering and confusion. As Suzuki Roshi said many years ago, we should open our Dharma eyes, and together we should help each other forever.
Thank you, Megan, and thank you, Les, for writing the letter, standing up with Ukraine. So by coincidence, reading what Suzuki Roshi said about war and his position on war and karma, I found just this quote that Les mentioned in his letter. Just 1 second, I will prepare the next thing to read. Can somebody read that paragraph that is underlined? The one that starts with, you may foolishly try to ignore karma.
I can do that. You may foolishly try to ignore karma, but this will never work. If you fight it too much, you will invite destruction that is worse than war. We are actually creating war through our everyday activities. You talk about peace in some angry mood when actually you are creating war with that angry mood. Ugh, that is war. We should know. We should open our Dharma eyes, and together we should help each other forever.
Thank you, Dave. Maybe you can also read, there's another quote from the book. This is a Crooked Cucumber, by the way. Maybe you can read the other quote that I selected. And this woman's question happened during a talk that Suzuki Roshi gave at the Berkeley Zen Center during the demonstrations against the war in Vietnam.
A woman said, "What is war?" Suzuki pointed to the Goza mats. They are about 3 by 6 feet, big enough for 2 cushions. He said that sometimes there are ripples in the rows of straw, and people put their hands down to push the ripples out after they sit down. This works okay on the sides, but when there's a ripple between 2 people, it won't smooth out. It just moves toward the other person. Without noticing it, people sometimes push these ripples back and forth toward each other. That is the cause of war. Karma starts with small things, then it accelerates. You should know how to deal with those small difficulties.
Thank you, Dave. And just the last thing that I would like to read is from Not Always So, a chapter of Not Always So, and it's called Changing Our Karma. And just a few paragraphs from there. I will share also on the screen. Can somebody read these first few paragraphs, please? Philip, thank you.
The best way is to know the strict rules of karma and to work on our karma immediately. You become very serious when you have a big problem without realizing that you are always creating problems. With a smaller problem, you think, oh, this is no trouble, so I can manage it quite easily. You may think this without even knowing how you will cope with the problem you have. The other day, Tatsugami Roshi said, a tiger catches a mouse with his whole strength. A tiger does not ignore or slight any small animal. The way he catches a mouse and the way he catches and devours a cow are the same. But usually, although you have many problems, you think they are minor, so you don't think it is necessary to exert yourself. That is the way many countries treat their international problems. This is a minor problem. As long as we do not violate international treaties, it will be okay. As long as we do not use atomic weapons, we can fight. But that kind of small fight eventually will result in a big fight. So even though the problems you have in your everyday life are small, unless you know how to solve them, you will have big difficulties. This is the law of karma. Karma starts from small things, but with neglect, your bad karma will accelerate.
And just to finish, a few paragraphs at the end of the chapter. Here where it says our minds.
Our minds should be more careful, more attentive, and more reflective. You may think our way has too many rules about how to treat things. But before you know what you are doing, you cannot say there are too many rules. So notice whether you are creating problems in your everyday life or creating bad karma for yourself and for others. And you should also know why you suffer right now. There is a reason why you suffer, and it is not possible to escape from suffering unless you change your karma. When you follow karma and drive karma in a good direction, you can avoid the destructive nature of karma. You can do that by being attentive to the nature of karma and the nature of your desires and activities. As Buddha pointed out, to know the cause of suffering is to know how to avoid suffering. If you study why you suffer, you will understand cause and effect and how bad actions result in bad effects. Because you understand, you can avoid the destructive power of karma. As long as we have an idea of self, karma has an object to work on. So the best way is to make karma work on the voidness of space. If we have no idea of self, karma doesn't know what to do. Oh, where is my partner? Where is my friend? Some people try hard to banish karma, but I don't think that's possible. The best way is to know the strict rules of karma and to work on our karma immediately. If you know something is wrong with your car, stop your car immediately and work on it. But usually we don't. Oh, this is a minor problem for my car. It is still running. Let's go. That is not our way. Even though we can keep driving, we should take care of our car very carefully. If you push your car to the limit, the problems are constantly working on your car until finally it stops. Now it may be too late to fix it, and it will require a lot more energy. So everyday care is very important. Then you can get rid of your misunderstandings and know what you are actually doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Philip, and everybody who read. So this is what I wanted to share tonight, what I was inspired by, and I would love to hear your thoughts and see if any of the things we read resonated with you. Dave?
Well, just briefly, I noticed during all of these readings, there was something going through my mind, which is, there's that wonderful old quote, when you hear the suffering of the world, help the one who's right in front of you. And to say the same thing in a slightly inverted way, when you hear the suffering of the world, don't harm the one who's right in front of you.
Thank you. I like that his answer to that woman when that woman at Berkeley asked, "What is war?" And then Suzuki said, "War or karma start with small things, then it accelerates. And you should know how to deal with those small difficulties." And I think that really resonated with me, because it's true. Many times, small things that we don't take care of, as he said, with the car or with so many other things, with personal relationships. Small things many times start with something that is completely insignificant, and then they really escalate. And looking at things on this small scale, it helped me understand how, really, what is war? I think it happens also everywhere, in our personal lives, in our sanghas, everywhere.
There's a wonderful movie called The White Ribbon, I think, by Handke. He's a German director, but it takes place like the day before, or a few days before the start of World War I, and it's not about the war at all. It's just about this little community of people and their intertwining karma. And it's kind of mysterious, but at the end, it gives that, for me, that same feeling when I saw it many years ago, that little tiny things going on somehow are related to this great big thing.
The white ribbon. Thank you for sharing that, Philip. I also found interesting, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? What he says, you know, thinking about karma, what Suzuki said in the last paragraphs that Philip read about not if we don't have an idea of self, karma doesn't have any object to work on. Of course, that's a challenge, and that's an interesting way to see karma. Dave?
For some reason, something that popped into my mind from what you just said, Teresa, is a scene from a movie that I saw on the Berkeley campus many, many, many years ago when I was a student. They were playing some old art films. I think this is a scene from the old movie Un Chien Andalou. There's a man who is striving to get across a room. He's trying to walk from one side of the room to the other. And you can see that he's struggling. And there's a sort of a rope around his shoulders going back to something that he's pulling, and it's keeping him from just walking across the room. And the camera slowly pans back, and what he's dragging is a net that is just full of all sorts of things, all sorts of objects and you know, pieces of furniture. And I think there's even a dead horse in the net. And it just, he's dragging all of this stuff behind him. And I guess that image kind of reminds me of moving through life with your karma and your sort of all of your actions in the future, what you're going to do next, are all impeded by all of this stuff from the past that you're dragging along with you. And it's all generated by that self that Suzuki Roshi says, if you aren't carrying that around with you, then karma doesn't have anything to work on. I guess, I mean, at risk of opening up a sort of giant can of worms here, I'd just be interested in hearing what people thinking a contemporary American Zen understanding of the notion of karma really is. I mean, in the longer, deep history of Buddhism, it got all tangled up with notions of reincarnation and so forth. And I don't think we're still carrying all that around with us. I remember one time a visitor to Kanendo asked Les what modern Zen thought is about reincarnation. And Les just said, well, we don't really spend a lot of time thinking about that anymore. And yet we still have this notion of karma that we're carrying around with us from all of our past actions. And I'm just curious about what anybody thinks is the right way of expressing these notions about karma in modern Zen tradition, especially if you don't see that as being all tangled up with the idea of reincarnation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your contribution, Dave. I wonder, I have some thoughts, but I would love to hear from other Sangha members on the call if anybody has anything to share. I think of karma, you know, just reading about this, and I thought about karma related to the movie image that you just described. Something related to our self, our idea of self, and our habits that are incredibly strong, our habitual energy. And that's how we create karma. Yesterday or a few days ago, Master's Isi Dasi, I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Teresa, could you just repeat really, the last couple of sentences? I think your internet connection dropped out for a second.
Oh, maybe I will have to move to another room. Do you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, and I was saying that yesterday I read the story of one of the female ancestors. I don't know if you are familiar with her story. It's the story of Isi Dasi. It's one of the female ancestors that we read during service on Saturdays. And she was this woman from an aristocratic family who had several marriages, and all the husbands kept rejecting her. Never can explain why she's a perfect wife. Even the husbands cannot explain why. And then eventually she just joins, she decides to become a nun, and she sees her past lives and understands why her husbands were rejecting her, because she had a terrible past life. And the habits and the actions that we do during this life and how we create karma during this life.
I think Giuseppe wants to talk. Oh, yeah. I think Teresa is frozen. There she goes.
Oh, sorry about that. Giuseppe, I think you You had a question. I'm gonna move to another room. I'll turn off the video for a second, but I can hear you, so please go ahead.
I just wanted to share a thought about karma, which has come up for Hannah and myself now in relation to Ukraine, the war, and what is the Buddhist point of view on all this. And on one way of talking about karma is as something negative, like I don't want to create karma, I want to get rid of my karma, and I want to burn away karma, and I am blocked by karma, I'm chained by karma. This is all things we say, which have a implication of karma as something negative. So I just wanted to put that out there. On the other hand, if we read the Buddhist teachings, there is a way of looking at karma as like, is not, there's no moral judgment on it, no judgment on it. It's just the law of causality. And it's what makes things go around. And what makes life happen. So that in that way, it seems almost when we look at it that way, or when there is that overtone in our teachings, then it looks like Buddhists are not really having a clear moral opinion or condemnation of war, which is also not the case. And so, you know, it's karma at the same time, you know, is the essence of our life. We are within karma as beings. We cannot be not under the law of causality, and still I think as Buddhists we don't have any moral ambiguity on the fact that we want to avoid suffering of ourselves and others, that for us is treat us the same. So so that was in, yeah. So, and the same applies to a personal life somehow, this tension between saying, okay, this is my life and this is my karma, and it's not good or bad, but it's my life. But also trying to make this effort not to harm ourselves. But sometimes I think, but it's a very different point of view, I think, than it's normally the way things are looked at. And it's also very difficult every moment to put it in practice. Yeah, just wanted to share that. Sorry for taking so much time.
No, thank you for your valuable contribution, Giuseppe. You always enrich the conversation. Thank you. Maybe we will have to end early today if nobody else has anything that
you would like to share? Oh, Philip, please.
Something that occurred to me, especially in the with that last reading, that I've not wanted to say, but maybe I will say it. Back in 2008, closer to the time when the Soviet Union disbanded, broke up, the current director of the CIA, and I forget his name, but he was an advisor anyhow at that time, and he sent a memo to the Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, pointing out to her, just in terms of the current negotiations with the Russian government, that the brightest of red lines for the Russian elite, not just for President Putin, but for the entire leadership of Russia, was the issue of NATO expansion into Ukraine. And I understand that it's the leaders aren't in agreement about expanding into Ukraine with NATO, the NATO leaders, but during that reading, it occurred to me that it's one of those little things where, well, they know we're not really going to do this, so we don't need to say that. We don't need to provide the guarantee that they're asking for. They're just trying to manipulate us. We'll just punt. We won't respond to that issue. And that I've felt that there were some things that our government, the Biden administration, could have done. That might not have made any difference, but it was, given the terrible suffering that's occurring, it would have been worth trying. And even now, keeping a more balanced view of the situation, that it's that our government's actions, we can influence our government, we can, and there are things that we can do to maybe mitigate the view of that's so black and white right now, and be a voice for some modulation of the position of the Biden administration, and in supporting, looking for a negotiating solution. But for me, anyhow, it was an example of something, well, this isn't that important. They know we're not going to expand into Ukraine. We don't need to say that specifically, that it was a little thing that might have been done to change, possibly to change the karma. I'm not, certainly don't pretend that it for sure would have, but. Anyhow, with all the silence, I decided to go ahead and say that.
Thank you.
Not wanting to. Create political controversy.
No, I understand what you're saying, and it's very related to what we read. Small thing that gets unnoticed, and then it becomes a large problem. Hernán?
Hi, Teresa.
Hi, man.
Thank you for your talk. And I wanted just to share something that came through the conversation that I haven't thought, is that in 1994, I spent 6 weeks working in Moscow. when Russia was just starting to open, and one of the persons we worked with, we had several meetings, was Sergei Lavrov, who now is the Secretary of State. And the experience at that time was that he was a great guy, truly a great guy. In his desk, he had pictures of the family. He was idealistic with the prospect of Moscow opening. Then we learned other things in Russia. Was a tricky, was a complex experience. And I developed friends in Moscow. Later on, I became good friends with two people from Ukraine. And now seeing them at war, what struck me most is that for me, they're exactly the same. I mean, I could not tell who is Russian and who is Ukrainian. They're the same people. And talking about karma also made me reflect about the relative and the absolute. So thinking about the relative of the absolute, today I was watching some pictures. One was of a pregnant woman, being taken out of the bombed hospital. Mm. And then I was seeing a speech by Putin. So in the relative, you say Putin, what he's doing is a disgrace. I mean, how can he bomb a hospital with babies and pregnant women? But then thinking in the absolute, now during this conversation, thinking as a Buddhist, it may sound naive, it may sound, probably naive is the word, but if I could do something by instinct, I will grab those friends from Ukraine that hurt pregnant woman, Lavrov, Putin, put them all in a room for several days, talking to each other, and that was the thing. I mean, at the end, we're all the same. So it's a terrible tragedy.
So there is I missed the last words you said.
It's a terribly, terrible tragedy. Brought by karma, by ignorance, by history. That is, as a Buddhist, I have faith that eventually, at some point later, they would understand each other. But they're the same.
Thank you, Hernan.
So the question is, someone has some comments. So this is in the absolute. But in the relative, what do you do in the relative? I mean, how do you stop something like Putin? I mean, for me, it comes in a sharp focus, where we have been talking in the Sandokai about the relative and the absolute.
Philip.
I have to ask Hernan about the absolute. I was thinking after you just spoke about Suzuki saying that karma has to have something to work on. And when it seems like he was talking, do you understand him to be talking about the same thing when he says if the self is... self-centeredness is not there. There's nothing for
karma to work with.
Karma to work with it. That's the healing power of the absolute, or something like. Is that kind of what we were saying, or?
Healing is one part, but what I was trying to say is the frustration the frustration as a human being and a Buddhist, to see the suffering, to see the tragedy, to see one president bombing a hospital with born babies and pregnant women, many dead. And at the same time, remembering, for example, this person, Sergei Lavrov, remembering him in his desk, being a truly, truly nice guy. At that time, he was probably 40. He was young. He was very young, completely idealistic about the new Russia that was opening to democracy, opening to the world, with picture of his families. Very polite, very charming, which doesn't mean anything. Can be mean the opposite. But remembering those persons, remembering other Russians in the office where we were working, they were truly nice people, very nice people, and coming back from a lot of suffering. And now they're in this war, killing the Ukrainians, and which also are wonderful people. So this, I'm saying this based on frustration at seeing how much human beings can fail. And then frustration and hurt at seeing how much human being can make others suffer as a failure. So that's what I was thinking. What would happen, for example, with Putin and Lavrov as human beings, if you put them together in a room with some of the babies dead and the suffering people from Ukraine and leave them there outside of the government edifices and the power straps, you put them in a country small house, put them together for a month. Would that make them change? I mean, how could this ignorance be changed? That was the intention of this comment.
Bringing people into proximity.
Yeah. I think it's just human failure. And it seems that we never learn.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
It's true. At the same time, I am inspired by the teachings, what we read tonight, taking care of small things, yep, making sure that things don't escalate, and making our small contribution. Because if you think about the big picture, I think it looks, at least for me, a bit overwhelming. Yeah. Oh, Jaya.
Hi, Teresa. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
As we're talking, and it's something that I thought about many times is that about karma, is that it makes a lot of sense for me when I think about it from at a personal level, at an individual level. But somehow when we get to the collective, I feel like it just doesn't seem to work in a way that it does at the individual level. So I think what Hernan was saying is this gentleman that he met had photographs and had so many aspirations. And so likely, as an individual, perhaps, that made sense, his karma, and how he acted. But then when we get as a collective, it somehow doesn't, it just evaporates. So I don't know exactly how to put it, but I think it's a very individual phenomenon. And for us to try to understand what's happening today, what we see, it's so inexplicable how this is happening. In today's day and age, to think of how humanity can actually, how we've gotten here after going through two world wars and seeing the suffering and now to see this, I find it really difficult to use karma to explain that. And there has to be something else happening here, a larger collective and a larger force at work, something that I don't have an understanding of, and just very painful. And part of, I think, why it's very heavy feeling, and why you were saying earlier, maybe we're going to end early. I think it's weighing on all of us, and what's happening. And and I don't have an explanation from a karma standpoint. And as an individual, yes, I can. As a collective, it's hard. So that's all I had to say. So thank you.
Thank you, Jaya. Well, thank you everybody for joining. I hope you're all doing well. Travis, how are you?
Good, Teresa. Uh-huh.
Good.
Thanks for facilitating this talk on karma.
Uh-huh. Sure.
I think it's a gateway to compassion.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.